Okay, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Tarpon World Radio. This is Captain Barry with you once again. And today I've got a very special guest. I've played beachin' with Jake Owen because I spent so much time with this guy sitting on the beach. And this guy is Mr. Chandler Smith. Hey, Chandler, how are you?
Pretty good. What's up, man?
How are you?
Oh, I'm all right.
Good,
another long day.
Chandler, you can find him. He's the big guy with the big poofy hair at Fish and Frank's.
Chandler, a.k.a. Sasquatch.
Yes. You will not mistake him when you walk into Fish and Frank's. So today we're going to talk about shark fishing from the beach.
Yeah, and all the new rules and all that fun stuff they've just thrown at us.
Yeah, we're just going to have fun with this, keep it light, but throw in some jabs and have fun with this, like Chandler said. So to begin, I think one of the most epic nights we've had on the beach, Chandler, was when we caught 5 different species of sharks within like a 3-hour window. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was May 9th last year from the sand, and a group of like 4 of us across 3 hours. It was like we'd put a bait out, turn around, 20 minutes, have a fish. And it was like 5 different fish inside of 3 hours, you know, and all different species. So like for a multi-species night, that was just wild. And it up until this year, you know, my biggest fish ever.
Yeah, it was cool, the progression. We started off with like the slowest shark in the shark family, or at least in this area, which was a nurse shark.
Yeah, I got sundown, got a nurse shark, and kid Steven was like, nurse curse.
Yeah, we're like, all this night's done. We just got, you know, a big 7-8 foot nurse shark. That's like the biggest, humiliation kind of thing. Like, oh.
Yeah, it was like a slap in the face.
Yeah. Little did we know that things were going to escalate quite quickly.
Yeah, and then that kid Steven got like a really, really heavy 8-foot, 8-something bull. And then that kind of like added insult to injury on my end because, you know, I caught a nurse shark, then he caught a bull. And then right after the bull, I caught a 10-something hammer, like 10-7, 10-9,
yeah,
which was wild. And then this kid Kyle caught like a 7-foot tiger shark.
Yeah.
And then a black tip.
Yeah. And I caught the black tip on my rod, I remember. It was like, it was just, and that all happened. And they were all different rods, and they just all individually went off. Right after we would land one shark, it was like less than 10 minutes, another rod would start taking off. It was like perfect.
Yeah, that was definitely, you know, if we were halfway shark fishermen, we probably would have quit right then. It'd be hard to do that again.
Yeah. I remember the nurse was right at like 7, 7.5 feet. The black tip was right at like 5'2". Your hammerhead was 10'9".
Somewhere around there, 10'7", 10'9". It was close to a lot. It was like high tens.
Yes. And then the bull was 8'9". Because I remember that because I went in the water and, you know, grabbed the tail of that thing. And I remember measuring and I just never forgot that. That was unbelievable.
Yeah. And to like give you an idea how quickly that all happened. So Barry got this really cool picture of me with the nurse shark by the tail pulling it back into the water. And beautiful sunset. And then the bull shark, there's a picture that... you know, a beach goer got of all 4 of us behind the bull shark, and we look regular sized behind it, but there's still like a streak of pink in the sky.
Yeah, yeah,
or like dark purple, you know.
Yeah, it just turned from like a pink to like a purple. It's the same within a matter of, you know, minutes.
Yeah, but you know, it just all happened. Like there probably wasn't more than like half an hour in between every fish. There couldn't have been.
Yeah. I know, man, that was epic.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I don't know if we've put a lot more time on the sand since then, and I would say that we haven't come anywhere close to that.
Yeah, so. I don't think we could reproduce that night if we tried.
Yeah.
We could do it, you know, the three good months out of the year for the next 10 years and not do it again.
Yeah. That was unheard of. But all right, so let's now that we've got our credibility out of the way.
Yeah, you know, we actually go do this. I'm not just like, we're not going to feed you some secondhand information. We've got hands-on experience.
Yeah, exactly. We've kind of done it. We've gone in we've leadered these sharks. We've, you know, dealt with some pretty intense situations.
Yeah.
And that's why we're going to like have fun with these little bit of these rules that came out and just see if they're realistic or not. And I don't know, approach and have fun with it. So, So I think one of, well, first off, this was implemented the 1st of July that now land-based shark fishermen have to take this. It's a free online tutorial and quiz at the end to get basically a certified license to shark fish from land. What are your opinions on just that in general, Chandler?
It's a great way to like educate people, I guess, but it just seems kind of weird. It seems to me more or less like it's to weed out the people in the community, like the quote-unquote undesirables that might not even want to put up with having to do that in order to fish. Gotcha. So that I feel like we're going to have a big percent of people in the shark fishing community or the land-based shark fishing community that are just going to go out and fish without that, regardless.
True.
And not really abide to maybe any of the rules, but, you know, it just kind of seems like a jab at us because, you know, fish die. When you catch fish, they die. And trying to target us as being the part of the problem with, like, dwindling shark numbers is, like, we might be a number or a percent, but, like, there's no way that land-based shark fishermen are anywhere near, like, the biggest problem.
Right. Well, I think to clarify what you're saying, when you say sharks die, like, it's not like every shark we catch on the beach dies. We've never had a shark together that's ever died.
No,
it's
no.
It's just, you're just saying in general.
Yeah.
When you like, fish, there is that chance it could happen.
There's always a mortality rate. There's always some percentage of fish that die because, you know, some people mishandle them. Some fish are sick. You know, like, you can't interact with animals in that way and expect it to go 100% perfect every time.
Right. And it's all it takes is it to go bad once, and for one, in this case, because fishing is not just for sharks, it's for anything, but just to have one fish, in this case a shark, wash up on shore the very next day.
It makes us look really bad, but like people don't understand like how many sharks die every day to non-recreational fishermen, to commercial fishermen and like longliners where they're allowed to do that on endangered species. So
yeah.
It seems like the focus is really heavy on us, and I don't know why that is. I've got a couple opinions on why I think that is, but...
Yeah. I see what you're saying. It's, it's just... It's where the recreational do get hit hard, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. And they held a meeting for all of these rule changes last year, and I'm guilty of it. Everyone I know is guilty of it. No one went to the meeting. Mm-hmm. No one who is a recreational shark fisherman went to the meetings. Mm. And I know people who live 3 hours away from where they had that meeting on the other coast and they didn't go.
Mm-hmm.
But we had people, millionaires, you know, who live in these condos or stay in these condos off of the beach, standing up and saying all these messed up things, accusing us of like using sea turtles for bait and puppies. Gosh. And like the FWC fought back and said, well, they're not doing that. You know, they're not quite that bad. But ultimately, the biggest thing was these people who don't do it just didn't want to see it happening.
Yes.
They think because we're there, we're attracting the sharks. They think they just don't want to see sharks on the beach, period.
That's exactly it. It's because, well, we get this a lot too on the beach when we're just sitting out there. We get a lot of, it's kind of funny, especially since Florida has a lot of snowbirds certain times of the year.
Yes.
And you have people walking by, oh, wow, those are big reels. What are you fishing for? And if we even dare say sharks, we say, yeah, okay, we're trying for sharks. There's sharks here.
Yeah.
There's sharks in Florida waters. Like,
yeah,
they're everywhere. So, but I understand that all it takes is, I mean, one shark attack, a shark to wash up on the beach and everyone just has that general phobia or fear of sharks and it just blows out of proportion.
Yeah. And there's like, you know, there's just all these, myths about sharks being bloodthirsty killing machines. Like they're an apex predator. They're up there in the food chain, but like we're not on the top of the list for things they want to eat.
No.
You know, but there's that just fear, like that primal fear of them. And
if people only knew how, like, especially in, you know, our area, how many, I mean, I guess you could say tarpon get destroyed and mangled by sharks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a natural feeding occurrence. And then how many people are in the water during that same exact day with these massive sharks around? And, you know, it's further proving your point, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I think at any given time being on the beach or even in the water right off the beach, you're probably within only a couple hundred yards of one of those, not just a shark, like a big predatory shark, like
right.
7 foot bull or a 10 foot hammer or like a 14 foot tiger that's cruising 900 yards out. Like yeah. you're incredibly close to those animals and you don't even know it. If it weren't for us, you probably wouldn't even know that they were there.
Exactly. If you never, exactly. And this is not to instill fear, enjoy the beach and everything, but it's just, that's just how it's always been on any, especially any coast of Florida. You just, it's an open sanctuary out there. But yeah. When it comes to the rules and this license, I agree with you. I know FWC is trying to take the right steps and to, like you said, weed out or just, I like the whole education factor because a few things that they do mention is like having bolt cutters handy.
Yeah.
We practiced that, you know, since we started fishing just because we know once we, it just makes it so much easier when you have a shark coming in. You don't want to sit there and try to get a hook out if you don't need to. Just cut it, let it go immediately. Like that's our main priority is the shark's safety and health. We don't drag any of them onto dry sand. Like that's the last thing we want to do.
No. And so. Most of these rules, the only thing that's kind of affected me personally is I have to use a different hook on a couple of my rigs.
Yeah.
That's it. But like having the bolt cutters and handling the fish minimal time, especially on like particular species, like as soon as we have a really good idea or kind of we just know that that's what it is, it turns into this like surgical procedure.
Yes.
You know, and the bolt cutters, it's not like it's taking me 5 minutes to try and get this hook out. If you can't pop it out with your hand or easily access the hook with your hands because it's just such a massive shark and they come in pretty green sometimes.
Yes.
The bolt cutters are like almost, it's like
a staple.
Plan A, plan two.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. It's definitely a plan A. An 8 foot bull shark in the surf trying to deal with that thing.
It's
350 plus pounds. You have you're in this environment. You have no control
yeah.
of that animal. As big as, just to give you guys reference, Chandler and I are both around 6'4". We're like, you know, combined weight close to 500 pounds, probably.
Yeah, probably like, more, man. Like I'm a big guy,
and we have no way of handling these. Just the two of us, these big sharks.
Yeah,
not at all.
And those big bulls, man. Like it seems like you get one that kind of zigzags in. It doesn't really pull a lot of drag, maybe initially, and then you throw it in low gear, and the thing zigzags in. But as soon as you put your hand on it, it comes alive, dude. Like someone hit it with a lightning bolt. They become incredibly hard to handle if you don't know what you're doing, especially.
Yeah, or it's funny, like you say that, because sometimes they just kind of come in nice and chill, and they're just like, oh, this is a fun ride. And then I think once they feel the sand underneath their body, they're like, oh my god, they start freaking because they're like, oh my gosh, I'm in shallow water.
Yeah,
I need to go. This is not safe anymore.
Yeah, they start to act like a fish a third their size, but they have way too much weight to throw around at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So with that being said, bolt cutters, I appreciate them taking these steps to make it like a standard thing, because I know we've fished with some people that, you know, don't bring that type of equipment. We keep it staple with us. So I do agree that's a must. You have
yeah.
to have bolt cutters with you on the beach.
For the land-based shark fishing, man, bolt cutters to us is like a landing net for anyone else, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's one of those things. It should be part of your gear. And the fact that they had to make a law around that's whatever, but at least it'll teach some people, like, even if it changes 1, 5, 10 people's method of shark fishing for the better, it's still a good thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And another law that they, you know, that they're enforcing is using non-stainless steel inline circle hooks.
Yeah, which the non-stainless part I can really get behind, because if you have to cut the hook out, if you have to cut the wire and leave the hook in the fish, that's not it being able to rot out, like using a carbon steel hook or whatever, that's fine. The non-offset thing, I don't really know. Like there just becomes a point where it's kind of, stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. Like you could have been doing this for 30 years or you could be on like, you know, year one or two. I don't think changing the hook that much,
like whether it be offset or, you know, inline. I think it's just the research. That's what it shows, that inlines will have a more chance of hooking them in the lip than an offset does. Offset does have a greater chance of gut hooking a fish, not just a shark, but any offset hook, and that's why they implemented that, which I get, you know. That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it could be for the better, especially if you get people who don't know. You don't run that risk.
Yes, you don't run that risk. And in the long term, if it helps hook two more sharks out of 1,000 in the corner instead of getting gut hooked, it's done. You know, that law's done its, it's done its job, so that's fine with me.
My one complaint, my one thing that makes me a little sour about the non-offset hooks is we ever tried to put like a 20-aught inline into a 30-pound bait?
True.
It's kind of tough.
It is tougher. It is so much tougher to hook a bait with an inline circle than an offset, because offset has that bend. It's easier to get into the skin with that. But I actually did that the other night, and I was like, this is... Sometimes I do use used to use offsets, and it was much easier to put the hook in the bait. But with an inline, you have to like make an incision, and like it becomes surgical at that point to get the hook in the bait.
It's just a pain, but whatever, man. If that's something I got to deal with, it's something everyone's got to deal with, so it's all good, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't feel personally attacked by it.
Yeah. Let's see. There is another rule. I think this one's kind of questionable, just because there's different situations for this one, but when it says, I believe we must use 80 pounds of line or greater.
Yeah. So I personally, man, I have a setup that's kind of a tarpon setup. It's an 8-foot rod. It's heavy. It's got a Daiwa BG 5000 on it. That's got a 50-pound braid.
Yeah.
And if I want to go catch black tips or even sandbars, you know, you can do that on that gear. I don't want to have to run 80 pound on a spinning reel. Destroy that reel, man. The thing only makes 22 pounds of drag. So like, exactly. 80 pound drag is going to ruin it. And
exactly.
So it makes it so I have to bump up my gear, which is, I guess, okay. But like you said, it's questionable because it's very situational.
It's very situational because some of the sharks that we, like there's certain times of the year that we bring out 80 wides, 130s, even bigger reels called Everwalls that like, that you, if you catch an 8-foot bull or anything like of size,
it's catching a crappie on a snook setup.
Yeah, these reels and rods are no joke. So, and those have, you know, a 200-pound braid, like they have got line to the max on them. But when the smaller sharks are around and we just want to have fun, whether it be like you said, black tips or sandbars, that equipment is not necessary. But to even use other setups that have 80 pounds or greater, that's a lot. To enjoy the fight with those sharks, 50 pound is perfect.
Yeah.
I have a couple of setups too, so does that mean for the smaller sharks like black tips and sandbars, I need to step up the line to 80 pound? I mean,
yeah, that just seems a little, I don't, that's very questionable. I can't really agree with that all the way around.
Right.
I could see where, like, because it's 80 pound, you lose line capacity, so you might have to bump up the size conventional reel you're using. Like, I wouldn't maybe go target like sandbars on a TLD 25,
right?
You know, but
yeah,
running 50 pound on that for black tips is like perfect.
It's the beautiful setup. Yeah, yeah, it's perfect. So that's the one thing that gets kind of, that's a questionable law where I'm like, is 80 pound really necessary to say that it must be 80 pounds or greater? So even if you're targeting, let's say, bonnet heads, like let's suppose there's a great bonnet head run and they maximum get,
I want to go catch bonnet heads from the pier. I got to use 80 pound braid.
Right.
Like, I'm going to set the hook and rip it out of the water.
So that's,
that's the other thing about some of these rules, man, is it doesn't apply to those smaller species. It's land-based shark fishing, period.
Yes.
And that's, you know, it's so broad because the three things that they'll try and get you for on that is steel or wire leader, 4 foot or longer, a hook that is bigger than 1.5 inches in the gap. So from the point to the shaft is over 1.5 inches. And then if you're deploying a bait by any means other than casting it, what if I want to take a bait cannon out and catch 3-foot tippers or black tips? You know, like, I got to use 80 pound. That's going to suck.
There goes your distance. But you brought up some really good points. Number one, the whole, if you're using, I believe it states, correct me if I'm wrong, if you're using a wire leader greater than 4 foot of length, you're shark fishing.
Yeah.
So we typically don't use that much wire.
No, I'll use sometimes like 4 foot max.
Max.
Like max. But I kind of like, I like 3 foot. It's, I don't know. I know that people think that sharks are just these big, brutal, killing, eating machines. But personally, I think, and a lot of people probably agree with this, those fish are more sensitive to things in their environment or their prey or whatever than people really think.
Yeah.
A 4 foot leader is just more metal in the water to throw something off if they don't like that, you know? So,
yeah. So, I'm not even exaggerating. I don't think I've ever, like, we haven't really in the past year used a leader greater than 4 foot in length for wire. So does that mean, because they range around 3 foot for us, does that mean we're not shark fishing? Does that disqualify us?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, okay, I'm going to go out with 3 foot of wire that's got 10-knot hooks on it, and I'm going to cast it out, and I'm going to target sharks, but I'm not shark fishing, you know? Like,
right.
There's, like, some loopholes of, like, these gray areas, and, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, or like what you said, with the is it an inch and a half gap from the tip
from
to
the
shank?
From the point of the hook to the shank of the hook, if it's greater than an inch and a half, you're shark fishing. I could go out there with a 20-aught Mustad being an idiot, you know, not knowing what I'm doing, and cast a 50-pound braid with 80-pound fluorocarbon and a chunk of mullet trying to catch tarpon. And if FWC comes out and sees I'm using a hook that's greater than that, like, I'm shark fishing?
Right.
You know, that's kind of weird.
Yeah. Because wire, and another good point, too, is using wire is not necessarily for people don't use it only for sharks.
No.
People do use it for tarpon.
Yeah.
People do use it for snook.
Yeah. The two tarpon that I've caught from the beach and the one that I put someone else on from the beach, they were all caught on wire.
White, single strand, exactly.
Like, incidental catch. I mean, we knew they were there, but we were not fishing for them. And, you know, wire, a foot of wire is good for a lot of different fish, man.
Yeah.
Not just sharks. But, you know, that's the 4 foot or greater thing comes in. But I don't know, man. It's just...
Yeah, it's just what can you do, or what can you? I wish there was a bit more clarification, or I don't know. What do you think? Can you think of anything to, like, improve that, or just?
I think instead of a length of wire, they should have done how heavy a gauge of wire. Because if you know, what if I want to go for kingfish and I want to run 4 foot of wire on like a trot line or a trolley rig from the pier,
yes.
And you know, now I'm using 5 foot of wire because it's structure and I'm on a trolley rig, but they come out, oh, you're shark fishing, you don't have the permit. Like, I'm trying to catch a king mackerel or, you know, any a cobia or whatever,
right?
Like, why are they gonna try and stick me with that? It just seems like it's gonna make more waves than it really should.
Yeah.
And I don't know, a lot of the times, man, you see with these laws, like closures of seasons on fish, or like any fish, like the snook, redfish, trout.
Yes.
It's a lot of social media and just like people's backlash to something happening.
Mm-hmm.
There is like scientific data that goes into backing up some of these laws, but a lot of the time it's just people kind of crying out saying, I don't like this, I want to change it. And we end up with rules that are completely screwed up, man.
Yeah.
You know, these ones aren't that far off. They're actually pretty good. They're, you know, I can agree with most of them, but.
Yeah.
And there was no like transition.
You know,
there was no like, well, this is coming, so we'll put one law into effect and then another. And it's like, people have been fishing this way for sharks for 50
years,
40 years, man. And now all of a sudden, like, it all just kind of changed very quickly.
Right. So very abruptly.
You're going to see some people getting in trouble, man, over nothing, which is kind of sad. But
I know. I know. I hope not. I hope they're a little bit understanding and. You know, I'm anxious to see how the next year when they have this course again, because we have to take this annually. I wonder if there's going to be modifications, and just to see what they're going to be. There's got to be some modifications to this, but, you know.
Yeah.
I hope maybe this first year is a grace period and they just kind of educate
maybe
and
like
kind of.
Test the waters and see what it does. And July is a weird time to.
To implement it.
Yes, it is a very strange time. You know, we're kind of like at the end of our quote-unquote shark season.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I totally agree. So, yeah, that's... we're going to have to, like, stay tuned and see what FWC is for this upcoming year. And we're just going to go from there, so...
See what happens, man.
It was good having you on the show today, Chandler, as always.
For a little bit there, I kind of forgot I was on the radio.
Yeah. And if you can, if you come into Fishing Franks, you'll see Chandler. He'll help you with anything, especially getting a shark rod or any questions you may have. You want to give a plug, Chandler, where they can find you?
I do some land-based guiding, you know, snook. I got some spots for tarpon, you know, whatever. But you can get a hold of me on Facebook, Chandler Smith, or, you know, you can call or text me, 941-451-008.
All right, guys. Well, this is Tarpon World Radio. If you have any questions, find me on Instagram on Tarpon World and shoot me a DM, and we'll go from there. Have a good day.